Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Roman Novak. Roman has been a teacher for the past 18 years and has taught varying subjects from grade 7 to grade 12. He's a passionate ELA teacher, department chair, and leader for several years, and he's transitioned to various roles from classroom to student success coach and leader to a specialist in the integration of technology in the classroom and a coach to develop 21st century skills. He's also completed a 3-year secondment with the Ministry of Education in Ontario to lead and champion the student success and learning until 18 strategy. A father of two, he's passionate about pedagogy and researches strategies to increase student engagement and motivation. In the last few years, he's done meaningful work, research, and led movements to include diversity and center teaching around equity and social justice. Roman is also a presenter and speaker at various conferences in Canada and the United States and has been a guest on various podcasts. Roman loves to collaborate with educators around the globe on various projects. He's an active member on Twitter and founder of the hashtag BuildHopeEDU chat, where his objective is to participate in active changes in education, in the educational system through equity, hope, and student engagement. His first book, Build HOPE, The Courage to Change, to Teach, and to Lead, is due out later this year. Welcome to the podcast, Roman.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
So I think anyone in education always has several stories where they're sort of in the trenches. I'm someone who's passionate and who loves to learn. Every few years, I sort of look for something I really want to work on, or something that really drives my passion and curiosity. And so after a few years in the classroom, I knew that I just wasn't getting anything out of my own learning where I was, where professional development was. I felt I was stagnant in my learning. And so I sort of on a whim applied for a job with the Ministry of Education. And I mean, I'm still young. I was hopeful, but I'm like, okay, there are so many people, there are superintendents and principals and all these people that are hoping to get this job. So I don't really stand a chance, but if I could at least have the experience of an interview, I mean, that's what I was going for, because I applied a couple times before and heard nothing back, got the interview. So I was super happy. And then by luck, the stars aligned and I was able to go into that job. And I think that 3 years, as much as I missed the classroom, was probably a 3 years of intense learning, reflection, and growth, and actually helped me make so many connections and grow my presence on social media and Twitter. And so going from a place where I felt I was just stuck, I was in a rut, I got a chance to really develop and grow into so many other things that has actually helped me as I transitioned back into the classroom after.
Yeah, and I think that's a great opportunity for people to take, like, you know, come out of their own local, just the local lens that you have, and explore a district and working for the province or the state, and seeing what they do, right? The kind of the governmental agency in terms of education. And what was your exact role in that? Kind of, did you work with districts or were you visiting schools at all, or was it more just at the provincial level?
Yeah, so it was very open. So I worked on the French language side. So in Ontario, we have English and French. So we worked together, but I concentrated my work coming from a French language district, working with the 12 French language school boards that are across Ontario. I was in charge, or I was championing the student success and learning until 18 strategy, which had a bigger team on the English side. I was sort of leading that on the French side. But being on the French side, what it allowed me to do is I worked with superintendents and principals. I got a chance to visit schools. I got the chance to work on the policy side and program side, so the actual government portion. So I was lucky to sort of go all around and was able to work not only in an office, but really sort of travel around, see how districts use their improvement plans, see how schools use their improvement plans, what are the different programs across the province that are using, what's working, what's not, talk to students, talk to teachers, talk to administrators. So I really got a vast amount of knowledge and learning in that 3 years that I don't think I would have been able to get anywhere else.
And then when you went back into the classroom, did that give you a new perspective on your role? Did you go back into the same role or did you take on a different?
No. So right before I left to go to the Ministry of Ed, I was a student success teacher and leader in my school. So I was teaching maybe one class a year. And then the other time I was there to support teachers and really work one-on-one with students, championing for those students who are at risk, who are struggling. And that was a passion of mine. I was doing that for several years. And then so when I went to work really with that strategy, but provincially, I learned so much. But I knew that one of the, I guess you could say dangers, but one of the things of leaving for other opportunities, when you come back, they can't guarantee that you're going to sort of go back into the same role. So when I came back, they needed an English language classroom teacher. That's what was missing at that point. And I mean, that's what I started out in the classroom. And I mean, it was several years since I've been full-time in the classroom and I have kids now. So it was a big adaptation for me to go back with that family. But honestly, I think the last 4 years, my privilege has been to take everything I've learned and actually apply it at the classroom level. So many times we see, well, what they decide up top never really trickles down and we don't. And everything I learned, I got to really put into practice with my students. So it ended up being a blessing in disguise as much as it increased or changed my workload to what I had before. The work that I got to do with students in the classroom, it's honestly been life-changing.
And so let's talk a little bit about some of these roles. So you mentioned student success leader, and in the pre-chat, you said that's kind of like what we call in the States an MTSS coordinator. So what kind of work do you do with students in that role? And have you been a student success coordinator or leader both at the elementary and secondary level, or kind of what where have you worked in that role?
So that student success role that we know here in Ontario is really focused on the secondary level, so the high school level. It does start around grade 7 and 8, so around middle school in the United States. But we don't have that same role that exists necessarily for elementary school. And so when I compare American to Canadian, I like to think of when you have like the tier one, tier two, tier three supports. Student success really is that sort of specialized intervention with students who either are at risk of failing certain classes or credits, because in high school we have credits, or who are at risk for other mental health or others, anything else that can really impede them from actually getting their diploma at the end. And our goal in Ontario with the strategy when it started in 2003 was to increase graduation. We noticed that in the province that students weren't graduating, that they became at risk for other problems as an adult. And so we tried to really put in to practice certain systems that are going to be there to support students. And so we've seen the graduation rate increase immensely. But I think what really helped us with that strategy and with this role of being a student success coach or teacher, leader, whichever sort of branch you want to put it, is really to give that extra support, not only to students one-on-one or in small groups, but to give teachers as well supports, because we know that when a teacher's in the classroom and you have anywhere between 50 and 100 students, how do you give that extra support to students who need it? It's so difficult. So to have that extra help there for you as an educator as well, I think is something that's really strong and needed and beneficial in education.
And so, as you said, this was kind of implemented by the province in 2003. So have there been student success leaders in every high school and middle school since then? Is that like provincially funded now, or are there some schools where they still are lacking people in this role?
So it is provincially funded. I won't go as far as to say maybe the middle school. That was sort of added through pilot projects and then different board budgets. And then the goal is to have one per school, but then it also goes sort of prorated to the size of the school. So if you're in a really small school, you may not have a full-time student success coach, but you'll have a part-time that's mm-hmm. doing multiple roles, because at the end of the day, when you're talking about equity, a school that has 1,500 kids and 200 kids, you're not going to give them the same support. You want it to sort of be tailored to what they actually have. And so the equivalent is there for every school. And then now with that strategy, sort of every school and every district adapts that role to their needs as well. And sometimes supports are given through the province for other reasons, whether you're in an urban setting or rural setting. If you're in a very diverse setting, there's a lot of different sort of colors that you can add to that role. But you know, as 2003, every high school has had that role there. And then we've added middle school, and it's something that luckily we've been able to keep now for close to 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's impressive, because I mean, I'll think of the districts in my local area, and some of them have these success coaches or, you know, RTI specialists, MTSS coordinators, but there are several schools that don't. And a lot of time it falls on the administrators, counselors, sometimes the special ed teachers to do some of these tasks, right? So hopefully the U.S. schools can take some ideas from Ontario and implement them. You talked a little bit in the free chat about the relationship piece with students and how sometimes teachers feel threatened, you know, because, you know, they're told, I mean, I know the best teachers know that they need to build relationships with students, but they feel like, you know, they might feel like they're not doing everything right, or what else am I not doing, in quotes. So how in the student success coach role, does one work with teachers who are struggling with that?
And so I think one of the things that we do, and I'm going to say very well in education, but it's not meant necessarily as a compliment, it's meant as a reflection. We really focus on what we're not doing. Okay, teachers aren't doing this, we're not doing this, we're not doing this, and students need this. And I think one of the important roles in that sort of coaching role is to say, let's not focus on what we're not doing, let's build on what we're already doing, and sort of use that as a foundation to keep going forward. Because I think where a lot of the fatigue, and I mean, we can talk at length, but we're not going to go into everything that has happened since COVID hit and all the changes and all the pivots that we've had to do in education. But we've been asking so much of educators and administrators to change, to pivot, to add and students, add to this, add to that, that I think we really need to focus on what are we doing already that's working super well. And I think that relationship piece, we've talked a lot in the last 2 years about relationships, but really in education in the last 5 to 7 years, those who followed Jimmy Cassas from his beginnings, the importance of building, it's all about relationships. And I think for a coach, you also have to build those relationships with the teachers. And I think that's something we forget in education. We focus so much on what we need to do for students and then what we need to do to support parents, that we also need to put a heavy focus on what are we doing and what relationships are we building with our educators? Because if our educators aren't fine, and this is one of my friends and idols, Dr. Jody Carrington, who worked with teachers, if our teachers aren't fine, our students aren't going to be fine. We need to take care of the adults so that they can take care of the children there. And I think that relationship piece needs to extend to our educators to make sure that we're building those relationships with them. We're making sure that they're okay, that we're really listening to them and what they need, so that then they can extend that same sort of grace and compassion to the students in front of them.
Yeah, and I don't think that can be said enough in terms of, like, you know, that's why we're losing a lot of educators mid-year, the 21-22 school year. They, you know, they're beyond burnout. And if they're not in a school where they don't have a supportive admin or colleagues, and they feel like they're just kind of on their own island, right, then that leads to just, you know, nobody's hearing me, nobody's seeing me, then I don't belong. So I think that's really important. Let's talk a little bit about some of your writing. So you've blogged. You've had some blogs that you've written with Josh Stamper and Todd Neslany on your website. And you also have hosted the Twitter chat I mentioned in your bio. So tell me a little bit about some of that writing.
Yeah, so again, while I was at the Ministry of Education, I didn't want to lose touch with learning in the classroom and schools. And all educators know, once you're in that sort of routine with your students and all that, it's tough to find time for yourself to really do that reflecting and do that personal growth, because you're so focused on the admin work that you have to do, the paperwork, the grading, mm-hmm. the planning, and all those extra things. And so when I was away, I really started developing, okay, well, let me reflect, and then sort of let me have the courage to sort of put my writing forward.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
Forward, and publish it. And it really started sort of sporadically. And then I sort of got into a groove of publishing more regularly and putting my ideas out there and publishing on Twitter. And then that's where I really started branching out and connecting with other educators and leaders. And that's sort of where I connected with Todd. And while I was at the ministry, we invited Todd for the first time to Canada. He came to talk to our 12 French language districts around his book, Kids Deserve It, which I read on a plane ride to Toronto and fell in love with. And then I got a chance to talk to Adam and Todd. And then through Todd, I met Josh. And then it just sort of branched out. I have a few posts where I've wanted to write with other people and collaborate. And I think talking with others, I mean, there's this one thing about exchanging verbally. And I mean, I felt on an island sometimes myself where I'm like, well, no one likes to read as much as me. No one really wants to talk or try new things. And so you branch out, you find those people. And that's how I sort of found Todd and then found Josh and then talked to other educators and participated probably at one point, at my highest point, I was in about 15 to 20 Twitter chats a week.
Wow. So
it was like 3 to 4 a night.
Yeah.
I could memorize which hashtags were what night. And then I sort of also had to scale back because at some point you need to balance personal life and work and your Twitter chats. And then it eventually led me to say, well, do you know what? I kind of want to lead a chat as well. And so I'm going in soon on a third year of Build Hope EDU, where every Sunday night for 30 minutes, because I know sometimes an hour is a lot for a person to really carve out that time. So 30 minutes of reflection on a Sunday night to start the week off really as a community, to be education as a community. And that's what I wanted the Twitter chat to be, is how to get community members together to just talk and share, learn and grow on a regular basis.
Yeah. And I think I don't really participate in Twitter chats, but I think, you know, having that community where they know where to come on a certain, you know, time, a certain once a week, right? You know, helps them, you know, connect. And like you said, it could be a little bit overwhelming with 5 a night, like you said, but I think finding your people in that connection, I do more of the Zooms and the masterminds, but yeah, I think with some people it works just to write as well. So kind of go ahead.
I was just going to say, and I think what's important for all educators is you just find what you need. Some years it may be more Twitter chats. For some, it may be more podcasts. For some, it may be listening to Facebook Lives or Instagram Lives or doing Zoom webinars or Zoom meetings. You just really have to find what you're comfortable with. And what's great for me might be different for someone else. And you know what? I just want educators to know that it's okay. Choose the PD that you need and that you feel comfortable with and just go with it. And don't just try to jump on the bandwagon. And you can try it out and say, you know what? I did it once or twice, not for me, or I'll come back to it. And it's just to really find what you need.
Yeah, I'm big on that. Finding the PD and just those connections that work for you and your schedule. So let's talk a little bit about your first book that's coming out, Building Hope. That is a contract you signed with Codebreaker. I've had several guests on the podcast who published with Codebreaker. So tell me what this book is about.
Yeah. So when I started the Twitter chat, and I mean, when I started out on Twitter, I was very big on kindness. And then I sort of started a hashtag with another educator called Be Kind EDU. And I found that was important. But then I found it just wasn't enough as I was reflecting. I'm like, and I'm all about, like, I participate in the Random Acts of Kindness Week and World Kindness Day that's in the fall. And I'm really big on it. But I'm like, there was a piece that was missing for me. And so that piece sort of came together with all my reflection and talking. It was all centered around hope, how we're asking people to change. We're asking educators to change. We're looking at everything that's going on with equity, diversity, and social justice. And I'm like, none of this will work if we don't believe in the hope that things can get better, that we can change for the good. And so that that's really where it sparked. If you have that foundation of hope, if you have that foundation that things can get better, how can we then infuse it and see the changes happen? And so the reason that I wanted my book to focus a lot on the courage to change, to teach, to lead is, well, we're asked people to change. So, I mean, that's asking a big thing for someone to change something about who they are or what they're doing, and then about how we teach. And then we're all leaders as well. And so the importance of how we lead. And then I wanted, like, this is a project that I've been working on for a long time, the idea from sort of conception to where I am now. But I think one of the big things, and I talked about the Twitter community, is I want this book to be about a community. It's not just Roman putting out his words out there. And so every week in my Twitter chat, I sort of spotlight educators that I call beacons of hope, because I think we're all there as sort of hope builders. And so throughout the book, I have over a dozen educators who are beacons of hope, who are sharing, depending on the chapter focus, who are sharing how they're sort of building that hope in where they are and their environment and what they're doing. And so I really wanted this book to represent my learning and our learning on the diversity, the whole social justice, but how the foundational importance of hope is necessary in education, but is often missed, because we often just talk about it as a, let's just do a lesson on hope or a lesson on social emotional learning and then check, it's done, instead of infusing everything we do with hope and social emotional learning. Like, that really needs to be sort of the rock or the foundation of everything we do.
And I think this subject, hope, that hasn't been talked about enough. Like, you mentioned kindness and World Kindness Day, but the fact that a lot of people, I think, are feeling hopeless because of this seemingly never-ending pandemic, right? And or, you know, feeling hopeless in terms of, you know, their struggles, if they're having students with a lot of behavior issues this year, whatever it may be, right? So looking forward to that release. I think, you know, the tools that you're able to give educators from that, you know, are something that we can implement in our work, because I think we don't want to give up hope. I think that's kind of what's been happening in this mass exodus. People just, they aren't able to see the light at the end of the tunnel, and, you know, build that resiliency. And that's kind of why I have the podcast, because I want to highlight these stories that people learn from, the trench stories and building resiliency. So both of us like to speak at conferences, and you are have a conference coming up in Toronto pretty soon on literacy and reading. And what types of sessions do you tend to give at conferences? And so what would this conference entail?
Yeah, so when I started out in conferences, it all turned around technology and 21st century skills. That's how I sort of got my start in the conference sort of arena. And then as things were progressing and I went back to the classroom, I really went back. I mean, I'm an English language arts teacher, so I went back to literacy a lot. And then I discovered this conference that's, I mean, it's been going on for over 40 years in Toronto, but didn't know about it until a few years back, called Reading for the Love of It. I started to attend it really just as an attendee. I'm a learner, going and meeting with authors and other teachers. And then eventually being asked to speak. It's a bilingual conference, so there are sessions in English and French. And knowing that for them, it was tougher to find, especially in the Toronto area, some speakers that had a facility with French, they sort of asked me to sort of spearhead some sessions in French. And then, so I've really done a focus in the last several years in a lot of the sessions I've been doing around speak with others, but we don't focus on anything else. And then, does the story have meaning? Are we learning anything? And so one of the things that I've been working a lot on in the last few years, and what I sort of include in my sessions, especially in this upcoming conference, is a lot of going beyond just reading for decoding and how to read with meaning as we decode. So from the types of books we choose to the links that we make to taking a book and linking it to, I mean, with the older students, it could be with podcasts and social media posts and TV shows and movies, and sort of show how they all sort of tie in together. With the younger kids, it's looking, and even with the older kids, I've used picture books with my high school students and show the links with some of the novels, but it's that choice in what we read that becomes important. So we really find some depth and meaning on what does it mean to show empathy and compassion and understanding? How do we deal with what's going on around us and sort of include it in the classroom with our reading? So students aren't just reading for the sake of reading or to show that they have a proficiency in language. Students are reading so they can actually make an impact in their life in the world. And that's sort of the lens that I try and bring in with this social equity and diversity is, let's look at what we're reading, who we're reading about, what stories are missing, and what are we learning? And then what changes is this going to bring? Because it's all about bringing about some sort of impact in our community.
And you pointed out in the pre-chat a little bit about how traditional teachers view classical versus modern literature, maybe, and some of them may be a little hung up in just teaching the classics. And I've seen that also having taught English at the high school level. So what would you say in some of those sessions about kind of mixing the two?
Yeah, so this whole idea, and I'm not going to be here to start a debate, but this whole idea of that traditional literature canon, I sort of don't adhere to it. I mean, there are amazing books I love to read with students and teach Frankenstein. So that will be dubbed what we call a classic. I don't mean death to all classics. I just mean we have to look at the history of what books were created as classics, who were they written by, why and who talked about them as classics, what does that mean, and why are we not using books with those classics to sort of talk about, well, I mean, if you look at Frankenstein, because that's a book I absolutely adore, we talk about science and technology and nature and what's going on and the limits that we put in society and our own knowledge. I mean, the ethics behind Frankenstein, you could tie into so many ethical issues with other novels. And so I think what teachers need to do is find that balance, but not be afraid. I think we're so used to wanting teachers to focus on content and having the answers and teaching a specific content area or skill instead of reading and then having students react to their reading. Because reading is supposed to be all about developing relationships, relationships with others who are reading it, but relationships with the book and your own learning. And so it's not about, here are the chapter questions that have been developed for the past 20 years and just answer them based on content. It's what are you learning? What messages are you getting? What do we think the author meant? How could we now transpose that message to modern day? Are there any other books that speak to something similar? What's going on today that we can learn? And it's all about creating that connection piece that we're missing a lot by focusing on what we call just the classics, or how many times I have students who come to my classroom, oh, we're reading the same books that my parents and grandparents read. And I think I'll forever remember an Instagram live that I listened with Nick Stone, who wrote Dear Martin, who I absolutely adore. And she talked about how in the next, let's say 10, 15 years, she hopes that schools aren't studying her book, because she said, if we're still studying the book, that means we're still stuck in the same problems and the same routines. And she's like, I'm hoping that we're going to grow and that we're going to change and there'll be other things we want to focus on. But if we're still focusing on the same thing after 20, 30 years, she's like, well, then we maybe have a problem as a society. And that stuck with me so much, which actually last year I was supposed to present with Nick Stone and then pandemic hit, that changed. But so many amazing authors who are writing today that their voices aren't included in a lot of English language arts classes that I think we need to change.
Yeah, definitely. And I think subscribing to like newsletters, like NC, was it? National Council of Teachers of English, NCTE, right? Those type of places, you know, you get a lot of ideas of how you could tie current events and, you know, new authors into your curriculum. And, you know, I think there are a lot of teachers that are just set in their ways. I mean, I've taught both a language arts and foreign language, and the same goes for foreign language. A lot of teachers don't like to change with the times, right? But, like you said, you want to not be recycling the same chapter questions that have been used for 20 years, right? Or not have your child today learn something different than how their parents looked at the novel 30 years ago. So, well, out of everything we talked about today on the podcast, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
I'm going to obviously center it around hope. I don't want teachers to lose hope. I know these are difficult times, whether it's mental health, whether it's the workload, whether it's the students and everything that they're going through. But it's really, don't be afraid to just stop for a second, to reflect, to really listen to the students and the people who are there with you. And don't be afraid to bring about small changes. And I know, depending where you are, some districts, especially across the states, they have like mandated lessons day per day, and they offer very little flexibility. And other districts and other provinces or states offer a lot more flexibility. I don't want to generalize for anybody depending on what you're having, but if you could bring about some small changes where you really listen to students and include what they want to talk about and what they find important, I think that's the most important thing. And I think in the last 2 years, one of the big messages that students have talked to me about in my classroom is we don't talk enough about mental health. Like, we talk about mental health in general, but they're like, if my friend is struggling, what do I do? And then we'll have teachers saying, well, I don't know what to do. And that, and that's where we don't always have to know the answers. So teachers need to also remember, you don't have to always know. Sometimes it's important to just sort of dig in the topic and talk with students, listen to them, and then say, do you know what, maybe I'll ask for help, or ask the district, I need someone, or I need a social worker to come, and let's just talk about it. But don't be afraid to sort of break from the script a bit, as long as it's there to build hope, as long as it's there to support.
Yeah, that's so important to remember. Let kids lead the conversation, let them talk about things that they want to talk about. And you know, that's something that, like, I was one of those teachers that was set in my ways for a while, and just say, you know, got to stick to the lesson. But when you learn that you need to build relationships, you want to listen to what kids have to say. And if they want to, you know, find out more about how they can help a struggling friend, that's, you know, much more of a timely topic than the chapter questions for their book.
And you sort of touched right there. And that's the problem with the chapter questions. It doesn't allow students to really feel and think and talk about it. They feel stuck there. This is where we have to go in the discussion. So if we branch that out a bit, we can still measure the same skills, look for the same things, but really develop their own criticality and reasoning and thinking, and really go into that literacy portion, but with meaning that's going to actually give something to the student.
Well, where can people connect with you and find you online?
So probably number one, although it changes time to time, but number one has always been Twitter for the last several years. So it's at NOWAKRO, so for Novak, and then RO for Roman. Lately, I've loved developing more Instagram. There's a whole other side that you can include that you can't include with Twitter. And so that's just my name, Roman.Novak. I am on Facebook, Roman.Novak.73. And with specific questions, I mean, if people have it, by email is also good, although through DMs, through all the different social media channels also works, but that's mrmr.roman.novak, N-O-W-A-K, at gmail.com. Always have to pronounce it and spell it, because the Novak and the W throws people off, but that's a whole other lesson that I give my students about my culture and my past.
Well, it was a pleasure having you on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. Thanks so much, and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much for inviting me and letting me share my platform.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it. And if this episode resonates especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC. Thank you.